Hey everybody, welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where myself, DanSevenPointsComing.net, and CherylWallstrompush.com talk all things Game of Thrones, Song of Fire, fantasy fiction, sci-fi, genre, all that stuff. We are not actually live today because of some boring behind-the-scenes technical stuff. We will usually, this is a pre-tape show. Cheryl, how is your pre-tape self feeling?
My pre-tape self is fine. You know, enjoying the lovely weather outside.
Oh my God, it's so nice.
It is so nice. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. I'm coming down from, you know, the Game of Thrones high. We gotta make a new normal here.
We're in a whole new era.
We are. You know, I'm pretty excited about it because there's a whole world stuff I want to talk about. But, you know, we're not quite done with the Game of Thrones fallout or the what comes next. There's stuff coming next. I thought we would start today by talking about some of the fallout that's still happening with Isaac Hempstead Wright, who plays Bran Stark, telling, I think he just told HBO's Picking Game of Thrones blog, basically talking about, you know, how he found out that Bran was going to be the king of Westeros. And I think the interesting bit here that fans are talking about was that he said, which isn't really a surprise, but it is kind of cool to get it confirmed, that yes, it is George R. R. Martin's idea to make Bran king of Westeros. I could read his quote, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah. So I think that's we've gotten it. We have found that.
I mean, we knew that, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think that it was going to be I think Dany's will burn the city. The question more is, okay, I guess it's like a two-prong question.
Oh, okay.
Does this make you more or less interested to read how things end the Song of Ice and Fire?
Okay.
Knowing that this is the ending we're going to get.
Okay.
B, how is it going to happen differently in Song of Ice and Fire? And I guess in just a more general sense, is interest in Song of Ice and Fire... I know, I'm adding that. Is the fact that we know the ending going to reduce interest in general, or is it more about the journey?
Okay. So, A, does this make me personally more or less interested? At this point, I've basically resigned myself to, if we get it, great. If we don't get it, we still have the show.
I think that's healthy.
You know, I try. I try to have healthy approaches to fandom these days. It's just much better for everybody. So I guess it's kind of neutral, maybe a little less interested. But yeah, it's just, oh, okay. That's not a huge surprise, kind of like you said.
Well, I mean, I just think because of the backlash that happened in season 8, I think there were some people probably clinging to, which is not the way it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But again, I think most of that was about not what happened. It was about kind of how it happened.
Yeah.
So I never had any doubt in my mind. Yeah, Bran will become king. I do think it'll probably be a bit different in the books.
That's the next question that I have to answer.
Look at that segue. You don't have to answer. We can just have a free-flowing exchange of ideas in the marketplace.
You capitalist, you. As for how it's going to play out differently, I think the bulk of how it's going to be different is going to come in who does the deciding because of the whole who's dead and who's not dead in
the Song of Ice and Fire. Better, yeah.
Right, versus Game of Thrones, the show.
Like, can't you picture Arian Martell, like, in place of that rando Dornish guy or something? Something like that.
Not Quentin.
Yes. Hashtag not Quentin.
Yeah. Like, I think that's going to be the bulk of where it's going to come from. And if Tyrion gets the big, long speech, it's going to be, like, several chapters worth of speech.
I can already picture that being a long, long bunch of chapters.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
I mean, we're kind of relitigating things that are now like 3 weeks stale, but I still wish there had been like more horse trading in that sequence that I like. They could have sold that to me. Like,
they could have.
I just thought it needed more finessing.
I think it's worth relitigating it because we're talking about how it's going to play out on the other version.
That's true.
So yes, I think that's where the bulk of it's going to come from is that we're going to get all of the horse trading and backstabby-stabby. And whether or not we'll be interested in it depends on how Winds of Winter and the rest of Dream of Spring plays out.
I was also saying, like, there's a fear that there might be too much horse trading.
Oh,
like,
yes.
With Martin, because, you know, he loves the details.
Oh, yes.
It's all about balance, Cheryl. All things in life are.
Balance in the force.
Not enough, too much. Okay,
yeah. And remind me what C was again. That was only part for two, and you...
I gotcha.
And you gave me three.
C was kind of like a big... And anybody out there watching this pre-tape version, feel free to leave your comments. is kind of a bigger question of, so this was a pretty unique situation where we had a book series running alongside a show. Now the one has ended. What happens to the mystique of A Song of Ice and Fire now in general? Like, apart from just, we now know what Bran becomes king. Like, are people still going to be interested in seeing, in, like, how the series turns out? Like, are they going to be as, probably not as ravenous as they have been over the past several years, and it'll be as big a talking point. But, do you think people are kind of satisfied now that, like, oh, I know how it ends, I'm going to drop it? Or was it always about the journey, and that's what they're looking forward to?
I don't think we can put readers into one camp or another.
No,
I think
they're on the two camps.
I know, but I'm saying that...
No, I'm kidding.
No, there's a third camp, Dan. Let me have my third camp. Yeah, like, it really kind of depends, I think. What response you're going to have personally is going to depend on what your journey with A Song of Ice and Fire / Game of Thrones has already been. So, for me, where I kind of started the books and the show around the same time, I'm like, okay, I have had the journey once. I don't necessarily need to have the journey again. I'll probably take the journey, but not, like, day and date release, locking myself in my room to do it. But
quick tangent, like, for a reader like you who's so good at that, how long does it take you to read, like, a new Song of Ice and Fire?
It depends. The last time I read them seriously, like, it took like a couple days per book. Two or three. Maybe.
Very impressive.
For the shorter ones, and then it was like 3 to 4-ish for the longer ones. But yeah,
she's like an amazing speed reader type person. It's remarkable.
I just read a lot. It's practice.
You can America's Got Talent and just read books on stage.
Like, and I'm done. no, that would be like a 2-hour act, and I don't think I could be very interesting. But yeah, I think it kind of has lost some of the mystique, because it's not like an anime where it runs ahead of the source manga and then they just make filler episodes, which has been done infamously.
Many times, yeah.
Especially with Naruto. The long break or, between the first part and then Shippuden. But yes.
Doesn't Full Metal like that too?
I think so.
The first one?
The original Full
That's
Metal.
That's a really cool point of comparison that I don't see brought up a lot.
Yeah.
That, I mean, but, you know, it was so unique, the story of the books are going, the shows overlapping them. Like, it's never happened before. You're right, it happens all the time in anime.
It happens all the time.
So there are some comparison points.
Yes.
That, and, you know, I think we should maybe look into that maybe a little bit and see what successes and failures were there, because I'm sure there were some.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Naruto is kind of infamous for how much filler there was, because there's a block of many, many episodes that are just filler. But yeah, I think some of the mystique is definitely lost for a lot of people. And it's going to come down to, do you want to take that journey again? And, you know, the path might be a little different, but the end result is still the same. And I think there are definitely going to be some people who are like, no, I have such a bad taste in my mouth from how this all ended. And frankly, the more I think about it, the more I don't want to read George R. R. Martin. So I'm going to wait on it, or I'm not going to do it at all, or something like that. So I think yes is the basic answer to my question, your question.
It'll be interesting. Absolutely. Of course I'm going to read it, because, I mean, come on. But
we've met.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if interest flags in the mainline series. It doesn't really matter for him. I mean, he already has the money in the world.
No.
He's fine. But yeah, what a unique little chapter we've ended in American pop culture zeitgeist. All right. But Game of Thrones is over. But as we all know, HBO is readying stuff. And I felt really nostalgic this week when there were, like, social media posts about cast members for the new show posting, you know, their little, we're in Belfast visiting the what and what and what. I'm like, aw, they don't know what they're, like, HBO hasn't told them to stop, cut that the crap out yet, which is adorable. And also,
soon.
Probably. And it just felt nice to be doing that again, because, you know, not everything is over. This did feel pretty familiar. But really quickly, they're filming the Game of Thrones prequel pilot over in Belfast. Looks like it's ramping up. People
Blood
like
Moon.
Jamie Campbell Bower. Wolf's Images. There we go. Who was on Sweeney Todd, Twilight, and Camelot, I think. is in Belfast posting stuff. We got cast members Alex Sharp and Marquise Rodriguez seeing the sights around Northern Ireland. We got Miranda Richardson saying she's so happy to be a part of the show and thrilled to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So it's happening. It's looking forward to it. I don't really have much to say about it, honestly.
It's happening.
But it does feel kind of deja vu-ish.
Doesn't it, though?
It does a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think... So there was some discussion on Wic about are people going to watch this prequel after kind of being burned by the final season? As always, it's hard to separate out, you know, the vocal people on the internet from just people who are just watching the show at home and then they end it and they go like to bed or whatever.
We are extremely online. It's true.
We are. I mean, in my opinion, I think that the premiere is definitely going to get some ratings.
Yes.
Probably a drop off after that. I think the challenge for the show is, can it build a new audience? Like, can it build an audience afresh? Because if it leans on the fact that it's related to Game of Thrones, obviously that's not going to be enough.
No.
But I mean, I think what we're all hoping for, and hopefully they can deliver it, is a show that kind of, you know, just builds its own thing. Builds its own story with its own cast members. I like that the cast members are mostly unknowns,
yeah,
with a couple of exceptions, and I'm just hoping that they can do something that is obviously a little related, but mm-hmm, different enough that eventually I don't want to think about the fact that it's a Game of Thrones spinoff.
I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. Like, we have kind of seen this be able to be done to some extent with stuff like the DC comic shows on the CW, which all are technically spinoffs of Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
but, you know, there are people who will not watch, you know, Arrow versus The Flash or Supergirl or Legends of Tomorrow. Like, they all have built their own different audiences by striking these different tones. And that kind of thing. So I think it's very much possible that it will build its own audience. I don't know if it's going to come in the first season. I think it might take a couple seasons for it to really find its footing.
Sure.
But, you know, Game of Thrones really didn't get big for the first... I mean, it was big, but it was not big.
It was a hit.
Right.
But it wasn't, you know...
It wasn't the freaking three-headed behemoth.
Which, I mean, I don't think it'll ever be that. I'm not sure that you can't... You can't plan that.
No. But the general trajectory where it really mm-hmm. started to kind of catch fire in season 3, roughly.
Yeah, 3-4-ish.
That's what I'm referring to.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm just hoping that it finds its own path and that it becomes a show worth watching.
I hope it unironically keeps the name Blood Moon.
I don't. I think that is such a weird...
It's great!
No, it is not.
Yes, it is!
It's so cheesy.
But yes, we'll that's why I love it.
Okay, maybe I'll come around.
We also have very different online experiences. So for Dan, he's like, Blood Moon. I'm like, oh yeah, Blood Moon. That's a totally normal name. But yeah, no, I think it would be hilarious if they tried to sell that. It's probably not
it would be. Blood Moon. It'd be funny. I'm not saying it's be funny, but...
Yeah.
All right, in other non-Game of Thrones news,
Speaking of goofy stuff.
I watched Good Omens over the past bunch of days, reviewed it for Wic.
Right.
You did not see it, but are you familiar with Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett, those old blokes at all?
Yes, of course I am.
Are you a big reader of them?
I'm not a huge fan, and mm-hmm. I'm much more particular to Gaiman of the two.
Sure.
But I definitely want to see Good Omens, just... There were external forces beyond my control.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's only been out for a weekend. But right. I watched it. I don't know. I was excited by it. It looked mm-hmm. interesting. It looked different. And it was a lot of fun. It was fun. It was a good, fun show. It's extremely British.
Excellent.
It definitely gives off, like, kind of Monty Python, Hitchhiker's Guide sort of vibes in Let's Embrace the Absurdity of It in that sort of British way that I think is not native to Britain. But
no.
You definitely get a lot of the comedy of that. It almost put me off a little bit, honest to God. Like, I've never been a giant fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's held together by those two, Martin Sheen and Michael Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
David Tennant, really, really good as the central kind of best friends, angel and demon, Aziraphale and Crowley. It was a lot of fun.
I love David Tennant, so I'm very happy for him.
Honestly, I like Michael Sheen better. He's really funny in this.
What?
No, in the movie, in the series. He was very funny.
Okay.
But they were both a riot. I also love, like, you can tell that Gaiman is behind it. And mm-hmm. I've read some Gaiman, too, and I do like him. I prefer him to Pratchett a bit. I've read a couple of Pratchett books, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote it all. He was producing. You could tell how much he had passion for the material by watching it. If you watch it, you'll see that he clearly kind of loves these characters and wants to wrap them up well. I appreciated that. I thought it was a good watch.
Excellent.
I'd recommend Good Omens to anybody out there.
I mean, I really do mean to watch it. It just
didn't happen. You don't need to. Whenever you want.
I just, things happened this weekend. I did go see Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
How's that?
It was goofy. I loved it. Like, I walked out and I was like, that was certainly a film that I just saw with giant monsters fighting.
Is it like purposefully goofy or goofy on accident?
It's a little bit towards the goofy on accident.
It's better at the end of the day, probably.
Probably. I mean, there's some really wonderful shots of all these monsters. So that's cool. And I do remember distinctly, so part of it, spoilers, takes place in Boston. And I was like, that's not what Boston looks like.
Is it Toronto-ish?
Yeah. I mean, they definitely tried to evoke the feel of Boston, but like, let's be real, a lot of it takes place through Fenway Park is major. That's all I can say.
Yeah,
so. But my alma mater is right by Fenway Park.
Okay.
So I know what that neighborhood looks like, and it was it did not seem spot on, shall we say. Monsters were great though.
How was Eleven?
She was fine.
Okay, good. Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah, she did. She did just fine. So.
Do you have any plans to see X-Men Dark Phoenix?
Not after seeing the reviews, I don't.
Oh, people hate it. That's a shame.
Oh, man.
So X-Men Dark Phoenix, new X-Men movie. I think probably the last X-Men movie in a very... Do you realize these movies have been made since 2000?
Yeah.
Like 19, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
And there have been a... This is the 12th?
Yeah.
These have a very long history. And now, since Disney has bought Fox, I think this is probably going to be the last one as we know it.
Well, there's New Mutants.
There is. But that's like a whole new cast. And I don't think that overlaps.
And that has its own problems.
It does. It's been cursed for a while.
So Dark Phoenix.
I mean, yeah. People hate it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a shame because it's kind of the climax of the 20-year journey in a way. You know, this big iconic storyline from the Marvel comics.
I know.
Sophie Turner in the front. Critics seem to be... okay with her performance, but the general consensus is it sucks, it's boring, it's aimless, it's kind of sexist, and it's just unpleasant.
I mean, didn't we do this before, like 15 years ago with
I
The
remember
Last
that,
Stand?
And I saw that.
I know!
And we did, back when, I remember her name, I don't remember her name.
Famke Janssen.
Yes, perfect.
Whom I love.
Me too. I remember her back in GoldenEye when she was the Bond villain.
Yes!
Oh, she was great. Yeah, she played Jean Grey. She went,
Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix. And she went ham at everybody. There we go.
Yeah.
And nobody liked it then, and nobody liked it now. I guess it's just hard to get this particular story correct on screen, I guess.
That seems to be the point that is being made by this movie also failing. But I think the bigger part of it was X-Men kind of had this weirdly circuitous, like, reboot that's not quite a reboot deal.
It was...
Like, they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit, I think, with all of this. And then by the time that we have gotten back to Dark Phoenix, we are all just kind of tired.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
I mean, some of those were okay. Like, I remember
First Class is
Days
good.
Of Future Past
and
was...
Days of
I enjoyed
Past
it.
Is good. Yeah.
Like, if you look back at it, these things have varied wildly in quality.
Oh my god, yeah.
It's pretty impressive. Like, I think Logan is considered probably one of the better superhero movies that have come out in the past couple of decades.
Oh, yeah.
I remember liking X2 a lot, but then you got, like... X-Men Origins, whatever that was.
Oh,
that was
yeah.
awful. We got this new one. So yeah, it's been a wild ride, and I think it's coming to an end.
Yeah, and I think that's probably for the best. I mean, at this point, Disney is probably like, oh my god, what do we do with this? Like,
I bet Marvel has some ideas.
Oh, I'm sure, but I don't know how long they have to let it...
Yeah.
Let the poor X-Men breathe, guys. Like, Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they get kind of incorporated into everything.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, I'm not sure how soon it'll be. You're right.
Yeah, I think it's not going to be soon, kind of based on what Kevin Feige has been saying here and there, where he's been like, we have not really made plans for them, like, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's the smarter approach here.
Sure.
Go a little conservative. Let the characters breathe. Wait until you have a good story, a good entry point, all of that kind of stuff. It's kind of like when how Star Wars is taking a break, too. Like, just let it all sit for a second.
I mean, I do want to point out that in this context, like, a break for, like, Star Wars is, like, what, 3 years?
It's the same concept.
Like, that's not that long.
No, it's not that long, but it's still something. I think the X-Men break will be relatively the same, maybe a little longer, just because 2020 is the mutants.
A generational break. More of like an original trilogy, prequel trilogy break. That'd be nice.
That's not going to happen.
I know. That's the world we're living in, but that's what I am thinking. All right, Rachel, any other thoughts about anything going on in the world of pop culture nowadays?
No. The Handmaid's Tale is back.
Oh, it is.
So stay tuned to Culturist for all the latest coverage on Handmaid's Tale. I watched the first 3 episodes because they all dropped today.
Oh, cool.
And it's a journey. It's a journey. But I wrote lots of words about it. So
sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank God this is pre-taped because we are now going to try to bring on Josh Hill for A Song of Dan and Josh. Though he's currently in a room with a glass door. So let's see how this works.
Bye, everyone.
No, it's pre-tape. All right. Hey, Josh. How are you?
I'm good, Silky.
We're back.
We are back.
We're back. This is the
first. It's been a minute.
It's been like 8 weeks, I think. Like 2 months. 2 months without A Song of Dan and Josh. The show
I looked at it, and the last time we had done it was the show right before the premiere.
Right.
Of
Game of Thrones season 8?
Yes.
The final one?
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a while. This show, if you don't know, because we haven't done it in a while, is a show where myself and Josh Hill of Fansided.com, Fansided's own Josh Hill,
that's right,
walk through each and every chapter of A Song of Ice and Fire, George R.R. Martin's magnum fantasy opus, unfinished as of yet, talking about each chapter, what makes them tick, what makes them special, what makes them good, what makes them bad. Let's break them down bit by bit and see if we can get to the juicy marrow of why these books are interesting and important.
Oh, yeah.
And, okay, we are currently on A Clash of Kings,
the
second book in the series, John 2. And by the way, Josh, let me start with this question. I was talking to Cheryl about this. Now that you know how it all ends, are you still interested in reading the book series?
Yeah, because my theory is that it's not George R. Martin's going to change things.
See, but you're wrong about that.
Is he? Am I, though?
Definitely.
He's come out and said that?
Basically, yeah. We were talking about it earlier.
And you believe him?
The actor, 100%.
Because he's so reliable with meeting deadlines.
The reason he takes longer deadlines is because he's very particular about the way the story goes. I mean, he has said a bunch of times that, like, no, I'm not going to change things. Like, his logic being that, you know, I can't change the story that I've believe in and think is good because people.
I don't think he's going to change it. I don't think he's going to change, like, oh, it turns out Daenerys doesn't burn down King's Landing. Okay. I think he's going to change it in that he's going to give us more context and he's going to make it make more sense. And that's why I'm interested in reading, and that's why I'm saying, like, I think it's going to be different because it's not going to. He's going to change things from the show, and that he's going to improve upon. He hears our criticism, and he's watched how somebody else has written this show. And taken the story and done what fans think is the wrong thing. And not necessarily change it, but he's going to dial it back or a little bit and say, okay, this is how we're going to make it make more sense.
Okay, I hear you.
Which I like, and I'm looking forward to.
And that I can hear. I mean,
because we're literally going to go inside of Daenerys' head as she's burning down King's Landing.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
That's awesome, yeah. I mean, you have to do that chapter. But then he's going to do that, and then we're going to get perspective, and we're going to say, oh.
There'll definitely be a lot more buildup. I mean, honestly, I'm not sure he'd have to change anything, because if we keep going on this journey, yes, we'll see. He takes his freaking time, George R. R. Martin, with all the characters. Like, I think he's going to lay. I mean, like, my big problem with the final season was that, okay, I bought this as a conclusion. You could get me to believe in Daenerys and Bran. You could get me to Bran being king, but I just didn't think they built it up enough.
No, and that's where he's going to come in and build it up. And he's going to make it make a lot more sense.
And I don't think he need. I don't think he'll need to change much because he already does a lot of building.
The best thing for George R. R. Martin and The Winds of Winter was how the show ended. Because people were already interested in seeing it because it's the anticipation of, we've been waiting for this book to come forever. Now fans are kind of like what we're saying, it can't end like this. Like, I need more. You're going to fix this, right? So, and it could even be bigger than it was going to be before because there's that need from fans to properly wrap up this story that we've been involved in for, for reading the book since the mid-90s.
Like 20 years. Not that it needs fixing. If you loved it, good for you.
I don't think it enjoyed needs fixing. It. I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. But anyway, okay. John 2. I think this was just like the shortest chapter we have ever read.
Breezy.
In this. It was like breezy. 8 pages.
Yeah. And so, not a lot happened. And there weren't a lot of people.
This was especially high on the almost nothing happened scale. So what did happen, Josh?
You could literally summarize this chapter as they're walking beyond the wall, searching for people that aren't there.
They don't find.
And there's snow and it's cold, and then the chapter ends.
I mean, yeah, we're being sarcastic, but I mean... The
point is, like, the White Walkers, right? Like,
the way we're reading these is kind of like, you're not supposed to just read one and then put it off for a week. But we are. So literally what happens is John and the Night's Watch are going beyond the wall. They're looking for Benjen. They're looking for anything to kind of clue in why things are going all weird. Mm-hmm. And they go through a village called White Tree. It's abandoned. Their wildlings live there. They don't live there anymore. And that's pretty much it.
Yep.
Did anything stand out for you with this chapter?
Not really. It was...
I'll admit, it was a quick one. I mean, you know, it's set in a mood. Yep. I do like the descriptions of, you know, abandoned towns are creepy. That's why they call them ghost towns. Ghosts are spooky. You find a ghost town, people live here, where are they? Where did they go?
Yeah.
I'm sticking with that. It's a good one. I liked some of the bits. I liked Dolores Ed is he was in the show. He's like a kind of the under the radar, not too flashy supporting character who's supposed to be very sarcastic and sardonic. I don't think they ever really did a great job with him in the show, but I liked his line here where they find like this disgusting hovel with like a dirt floor and, you know, like just a dingy roof. And he says, I was born in a house much like this. Those were my enchanted years. Later, I fell on hard times. You know, being like, this was great. And then I got to suck. It's funny. He's very funny. I liked the description of the perpetually angry Night's Watchman, Chet, who will end up betraying John later. The light filtering through the red leaves of the weirwood made the boils on his face look even more inflamed than usual. Mm-hmm. What a nice mix of a beautiful image, kind of light filtering through weirwood trees to reflect facial scarring. Good times. But mostly, I like that John remembers mussing Arya's hair. Got to keep that alive. Oh, that was cute. Again, I think we're probably out of the days when he's thinking they're going to get together, but it's good to keep kind of the connections alive.
Boy can dream.
Okay.
How much older is he in this book than he was in the last one? Because I keep forgetting that now 15, the ages are so much different.
It's fine. I also like how the Night's Watch, like John kind of talks about how they're going beyond the wall. And everybody's getting fouler and more short-tempered and quieter. And just, it's uncomfortable and it's cold and it's sucky. The one person who's not is Sam, who is weirdly not enjoying himself, but kind of coming around to the idea of, you know, like at the start, he... said, like, whenever he closed his eyes, he picture wildlings cutting his throat. And now he doesn't. It's gone away. Good for him. And John's line was, 200 brave men had left the wall, and the only one who was not growing more fearful was Sam, the self-confessed coward. Which is cute.
So, I know this, I'm usually ripe for a Star Wars reference about now. But this reminded me of Forrest Gump. George R. R. Martin's a child of Vietnam, is he not? Like, he was...
Yeah, so, I think it was a conscientious objector.
So this had a lot of the Vietnam feel to it, where it's we're just kind of wandering around, we're not doing anything, and there's this overarching threat that we don't know where it is, or if it's real, or if it's even around. And in Forrest Gump, Sam is the Forrest Gump character who just kind of haphazardly comes in, and you know he's the only one who's not really complaining about anything. He's just there, and he slowly comes around to the idea of everybody's just out there. But this thing, because we've talked about before how George R. R. Martin's played on history, and he's incorporated things in it, and that was that's the main thing that stuck out to me in this chapter. Is like, oh, this is very Vietnam-y.
All right, cool. So, I can take that. But, and I mean, really, yeah, I would ask for more thoughts. Do you have any more thoughts? It was a very short one.
It was.
They go to a town, nobody in it. They find some skulls in a weirwood tree. That's creepy. And we'll continue their journey soon enough. Next, I think, is Aria 4. Get back in the swing of that. We're back, baby. Song of Songman and Josh is back.
We're back.
We'll be here every week, every Wednesday, talking about it. Hope you join us. Join us next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time here at the Winners Community Facebook page. Thank you so much for watching. Good night.